This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram of sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. We're giving away net tickets game 2 in this hour. Giving away Nick tickets game 2 in the 5 o'clock hour. And if you needed even more reason to stay tuned, now we will talk with the great Stephen A. Smith, who joins us now on the Michael K. Show. Stephen, how are you?
What's going on, man? Good afternoon, fellas. How's everybody doing?
Everybody's great. How are you doing? How was it at the Garden last night? I heard that you were there. What was the vibe like?
It was electric, no question about it. Even though it was 15 instead of the usual 19,000, fans were rabid. They were ready to go. They showed up. Unfortunately, the all-star for the New York Knicks, Julius Randle, did not. And that had a lot to do with why the outcome ended up being what it was. But it's just one game. It's one game. There's no reason to panic. So you move forward from here and see what happens. But ultimately, the fans, again, showed up. Everybody was hyped and ready to go. But the New York Knicks shot just wasn't falling.
Now, I brought this up at the beginning of the show. Your best players have to be your best players. And clearly that was the case with Bogdanovich and Young for Atlanta. Not the case for the Knicks. And yet they only lost by 2. So am I too glass half full to say, hey, if I'm going to get 15 out of Randle and still lose by 2, I still like my chances?
Well, I would say this. It's not gloom and doom because I picked the Knicks to win the series in 7 games. I still believe it's something that they can do. But understand, it was a coming out party for a young star in Trae Young. This kid is cat quick. He can shoot with tremendous range. He's got ball handling skills. He's got passing skills. And he's mastered a beautiful floater in the lane and he knows how to draw fouls as well. So all of those things, you know, the Atlanta Hawks have a closer. They have somebody that they can give the ball to and say, take me there. And whether it's from three-point range, it's from getting to the line, or it's from, you know, making the right pass or whatever, they have that guy. We're still looking for that guy in the New York Knicks. And Julius Randle just did not show up. He just was not impressive. And it was kind of shocking to see, not that he missed shots because that happened, but guess what? Everything ain't just about your shot. And I brought it up on First Take today. Greg Anthony, our former colleague at ESPN, who now does tremendous work for the NBA and TNT, made an incredible statement. It just seems ordinary, so regular or conventional, but he was right on point. He said, just because you can't make a basket doesn't mean you can't make a play. And that's what Julius Randle has to know. Trae Young was making plays. Julius Randle was looking to score. And because of his inability to score with accuracy, it paralyzed everything else he could have brought to the table. The very last play of regulation, yes, it was 0.9 seconds left on the clock. And, yes, it was not a beautiful inbounds pass. Certainly you don't want to give Julius Randle the ball with his back to the basket in that crowded position. But Julius Randle could have simply tapped the ball back to Alec Burks, who had 27 on the night on 9-13 shooting, and got the ball to him and let him take the shot. But that wasn't happening because he wasn't looking to make plays. He was looking to make points. And obviously I think that hampered the New York Knicks to some degree significantly. The Atlanta Hawks, they have better, younger talent on this team. Look at Collins, when you look at Gallinari, when you look at Bogdanovich, with Trae Young and these boys, they have better shooters and better talent. The Knicks are going to have to D up and amp it up to an extra level and make them incredibly uncomfortable in order to win this series.
Now, in fairness, I don't think that with 0.9, he has a chance to catch and get it back to Burks there. I just think it was a terrible pass, but the guy who caught the ball had to shoot the ball in reality, Stephen.
No, I'm just talking about a tap. I'm just talking about a tap back launch from Burks. You had time to do that, Mike.
I would love to see that. It was a terribly conceived play. I don't even know why Burks was inbounding it. He was the hottest player.
I agree. And that's something about Tom Thibodeau. Tom Thibodeau had him inbounding the ball. Tom Thibodeau brought in Frank Ntilikina. You bench him the entire game, And when you bring him in for 1 minute, it's the guard Trae Young, cold, ice cold, after sitting on the bench for the entire game, and you got to come in there ready to guard Trae Young? In what world? And so I definitely think that there were some things that Tom Thibodeau could have done better. It wasn't his brightest moment, my runner-up for Coach of the Year. There were guys, Elfrid Payton starting this guy. Time to bench him. Put him on the bench, put Derrick Rose up in there. Let him and Emmanuel Quickly. I mean, when you consider the way Quickly comes in there, he hits two big three-pointers in the first half. He's hyped. He sparked. The moment wasn't too big for him. He helped bring the Knicks back from a double-digit deficit along with Obi Toppin. You got to find a way to make those guys get those guys to play. And it can't be because you're holding on to Elfrid Payton, who's been in the slump for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in the slump long enough for you to know that, guess what, we might need to make some adjustments. And not to say that Tom Thibodeau won't do it, because he did pull Derrick Rose off the bench pretty early. But still at all, you gotta read your team and know it's time to make a move already, because you can't let the Hawks go up 2-0.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it would be almost impossible if they were to do that. Now, how difficult is it to overcome, Stephen, when you're the underdog all year, right? You're the surprise, no pressure on you, and then instantaneously you're in a series where everybody expects you to win. Like, is that difficult for a young team to adjust to?
I think it's difficult, but I think what ultimately was difficult more so than that is the fact that, you know, you don't have a lot of playoff experience on the New York Knicks. I know you got a guy like Todd Gibson and you got Derrick Rose, and I get all of that. But in the end, the cornerstones of your franchise is really R.J. Barrett and Julius Randle. And, you know, they're relatively inexperienced when it comes to this kind of play, not to mention the fact that neither is ambidextrous. You know, when you go up against the better teams in the league, they scream, they're going left. They're going left. They're going to use their left hand. And they overplay because you haven't shown an ability to be ambidextrous. And I think that plays a significant role as well. Also, again, the New York Knicks might have shot the ball relatively decently for the most part at times. But in the end, what it comes down to is that when you look at guys like Julius Randle, if you're not making those threes, then Alex Burke has to make those threes. Derrick Rose has just been balling. Give him the ball more. Even though the ball is in his hands, stop looking for him to just run plays. Let them go ahead and have the license to make plays even more, because you got to understand when some of your other guys just don't have it. And I think last night they fell into that lull entirely too long. But the most egregious thing was taking Frank Ntilikina off the bench,
mm-hmm,
and putting him on Trae Young. That was more disrespectful than the guard chanting F Trae Young.
Now, Steven, let's move over to Brooklyn for a second. As a Celtics fan, I did not have a lot of hope heading into this series, and then I thought they played pretty damn well on Saturday night and were in this game till about 4 minutes left. They were down three, and Tatum was not good. Is this just a matter of Brooklyn finding their footing and it's a complete wipeout? Or if Tatum plays great and the Celtics put it together, could they pose any problem for Brooklyn?
I'm not going to lie to you, man. I think that Jason Tatum will score 70 points and they still lose.
Wow.
I don't see the Celtics winning the game.
Damn.
They had me on ESPN's Twitter thing at halftime of game one between these folks. And Malika Andrews, who does a great job for us, said, Steven, I mean, it's a close game, and the Nets have been struggling, and are you worried at all? I was like, worried about what? This is a wrap. I watched them play against the Clippers earlier this year, and they were down by 5 points. I went to my kitchen to get a bottle of water and came back, and they were up 13. In the blink of an eye, they explode.
Yeah.
When they want, how they want, on the offensive side of the ball. You're not beating the Nets by stopping them. You're beating the Nets because you'll get stops at key moments, but for the most part, it's because you're able to outscore them and exploit their defense. It's not because you're going to stop them. This is an unstoppable offensive juggernaut of a force. Nobody's going to stop. They're good for 110 to 120 points a game anytime they want, and there's pretty much nothing you can do about that part of the Brooklyn Nets.
You know what the most amazing part of that story to me is, Peter? that Stephen A. went to get the water himself. With that kind of money,
right,
you usually get somebody to get you the water. I'm surprised, Stephen, and it humanizes you. It really does.
I never found him to be that way, Mike.
Well, I mean, I do try to be human as much as I possibly can. and the bottom line is, you know, I mean, it's good to do your own work. Hey, listen, man, up until about 2-3 years ago, I was mowing my own lawn and shoveling my own snow. I mean, it was just something that I wanted to do, you know?
But you've moved on from that.
I'm a bit older. I have moved on from that. I do have bigger fish to fry. I have other things to do. My schedule is very, very demanding.
Right.
So I don't have time to do those things anymore. And the back pain is something else. So it's not worth it.
It's never I'm above this. It's just I don't have time to do it.
It's never that. I mean, I'm from Hollis, Queens, my man. I'm always going to be that kind of guy that's down to earth. Although I still have, you know, I just got back from Hollywood and doing some more scenes for General Hospital.
There you go.
Brooks got a love life now, right?
I am. Not yet. It's coming, though. You know. And, you know, so, I mean, I didn't ask for it. Apparently, the audience out there has demanded that Brick has a love life. I mean, I do aim to please, you know. It wasn't my doing, but they insisted something they might want from me, and, you know, who am I to deny the people what they want?
Now, have you told the producers you just don't do nudity? I mean, because there might be, you know, partial nudity.
No, I will never do that. I'm not, Michael K., I'm not attractive enough to do that. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to go that far.
You know your limitations.
I'm not going to do that far. Right. You know, I know my limitations. You got to know your limitations.
Right.
But, I mean, To be smooth and suave, I think I can pull that part off.
Getting back to the Knicks, like, whatever happens this year, it, if they beat the Hawks and then lose in the second round, I mean, what a great year. But they still don't have the players, I think, to take that next step. So then I read the story that Donovan Mitchell is upset in Utah that they didn't let him play in game one. Can we dream on that? Is there a possibility that Donovan Mitchell wants to get out of Utah?
I can't see that. I can see the Kyle Lowry's of the world, potentially the Carl Anthony Towns of the world, so like that. Devin Booker has signed on, and obviously they would love to get him because that's somebody I'd love to see in New York, Devin Booker at the Garden. And who knows what's possible within the next couple of years. But I don't see any immediate help to take the New York Knicks to the next level. But I will tell you this. The New York Knicks can win the first round, and the Nets can make the NBA Finals. And come off season, nobody will be talking about the Nets unless they win the championship. All they'll be talking about is the New York Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Knicks, this is a New York Knicks town. Make no mistake about it. And I don't think that's going to change. But the only thing Brooklyn can do to make itself relevant is to win the chip. And I think it's entirely plausible that they will. They're my favorites to win it all. I think that Kyrie is box office. He's absolutely sensational. Kevin Durant is a superstar. So is James Harden. And I think the combination of the three, there's nobody that I've seen that should be able to beat them. So if they lose, it would be a product of who they are and who they've allowed themselves to become. Not because somebody's better than them. Because offensively, I see no one better than them that can hold any water, any of their water. I just don't see it.
Bucks struggling in game one against the Heat. Is that just one off, or is that just an indication of the trouble they had with them last year?
I think it's an indication of the trouble they had with them last year. You got to remember something. Miami can shoot the basketball, man. They got a bunch of Rough Riders. They're not scared of anything. They can shoot the basketball, and they know the Greek freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo, cannot when it really, really counts. And so that forces somebody else to step up. Milwaukee was fortunate that Chris Middleton was able to do it in game one of that first round series, but it basically went as Miami wanted it to and had planned. You know, Jimmy Butler blows by the Greek freak and scores on a layup as time is running out in regulation. They stick around because they don't respect Milwaukee's shot-making ability from the perimeter come playoff time because they know Milwaukee's leader is the Greek freak. They believe in themselves. They believe they can beat this Milwaukee team, and Milwaukee is going to have to prove otherwise, but it ain't going to be the Greek freak because he's not a perimeter shooter. Defenses hustle back. They force you to play a half-court game, and then as a result of that, they force you to hit perimeter shots. That is his strength. The Greek freak is going to have to get that level of help. from the Jrue Holiday to a lesser degree, and to more degree from a Khris Middleton in order to advance to the second round this year.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Stephen A. Smith is our guest here on the Michael Kay Show. We had Tim Legler on last week, and he said the Nets are going to play the Lakers in the finals. Can you see the Lakers making it through?
Well, not if Anthony Davis continues to play the way he played in game one. Mm-hmm. He got outscored. He got completely and thoroughly outplayed by a puppy named DeAndre Ayton. And by puppy, I mean somebody that's in his first playoff game, just relatively inexperienced. The guy shot 90% from the field, 10 of his 11 shots he made. He got 16 rebounds. He had 21 points. And with him on the floor in the identical time to Anthony Davis, he was a plus 18. That can't happen. Anthony Davis cannot be as anemic offensively as he could. He can't set up the jump shots and all of this other stuff. He's got to be a man amongst boys and let them know, I'm not having it. I'm gonna take you to school. That's what he has to do. He's got to attack in the interior, get DeAndre Ayton in foul trouble, because that's going to compromise Phoenix. That's all they have in terms of bigs. But, you know, Devin Booker's a star, and Chris Paul is just a born leader. And the combination of the two things puts them at an advantage right now with LeBron hobbling and Anthony Davis clearly not playing the kind of games he's capable of playing. I still think that you don't count out LeBron and Anthony Davis, but I must admit to you and tell you that it wouldn't surprise me at all if Phoenix ended up holding on and winning this series right now, because Anthony Davis shooting 15 and 17 foot jump shots ain't going to cut it.
Anything to be worried about with the Clippers? That was not a good game one performance.
Very much so. This Dallas Mavericks team can beat these Clippers. Luka Doncic has been giving it to them. He gave it to them last year in the 6-game series that they lost. He gave it to them in game one. And somewhere along the line, somebody's going to have to call up Kawhi Leonard and ask him to respond to this challenge. Just because you're quiet and you got a cyborg's mentality and you don't say much doesn't mean you divorce the obligations to show up and validate your franchise caliber stature. The reality is that Luka Doncic has been giving it to them. And Paul George and Kawhi Leonard were known as individuals who were stoppers. They weren't just people who could score. They were stoppers. Well, why the hell didn't you stop Jamal Murray in game 7 when he dropped 40 on you last year? Why didn't you stop Luka Doncic now in game 1? What are you going to do? That's the question about, you know, in regards to the Clippers and Dallas right now, because if the Clippers lose, I think you're going to see wholesale changes. Doc Rivers is gone. He was replaced by Ty Lue. Lawrence Frank is the executive, okay? And you've never been to a conference finals. You just gave up a 3-1 lead in a conference semifinal. You haven't been winning. You better tie this series up, and you better not lose this series. Well, I think the Clippers, as you know it, will exist no longer.
So are Utah, L.A. losing at home? Are the Nuggets in the worst shape?
I think so, because they don't have Jamal Murray. And Portland can really score the ball. And you look at the multitude of guards and small forwards they're throwing at you. They picked up Norman Powell for Toronto. You still got Melo. You still got C.J. McCollum. You still got Damian Lillard, of course. I'm looking at that. You know, they're one of the top two backcourts in the game of basketball. You know, they're very familiar with one another. And I definitely think that when you look at it from that perspective and you compare it to Denver, not having Jamal Murray there, I could not have thought of a better strategy that Coach – Sal came up with for Portland. He said, no, we're not doubling Jokic. We're going to man up on him. We're going to cover everybody else. Let him score. Let him score his point. But he's not going to be able to get anybody else involved. And I think if you do that, that's exactly the way you beat Denver. And Portland figured that out in game one. And I don't see any reason why they would do differently in games two and beyond.
Now, June 4th, Stephen A., I expect you to be in the Bronx for Yankees-Red Sox. I mean, you're not just basketball. You cover it all. I expect you to be there for Yankees-Red Sox.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I mean, it is the NBA playoffs that are going on. You know, the Yankees and all that they're doing, I'm watching. But in the same breath, I mean, they will matter more to me in August and September than they do to me right now. See, I'm not a Mets fan like most of my boys, okay? Like most of my boys that grew up in Queens. I got a couple of boys that grew up in New York and now live in California. They're diehard Mets fans. Talk about it's a different kind of orange that they wear and we're special and all of this other stuff. See, Mets fans care about now. They care about the beginning of the season. I can take the beginning of the season for granted because I know that when it really, really counts, the Yankees are going to be around. Now, they may not close the deal, and that's something that we've got to work on, Mr. Brian Cashman. But nevertheless, they're going to be around. The Mets, they need to enjoy it. The Donald Greggs of the world and others, it's incredibly important that they enjoy this time now because as the summer progresses, we all know that injury is going to come squeezing through the door. We understand. These are the Mets. This is who they are. And so you got to enjoy them now because their time is going to end. But the Yankees, you know, that's when we'll be percolating. That's when we'll be stepping it up in August and September. We understand how this goes.
Well, time's changing. You got a new owner, new attitude, Steven.
I know it's touching. Isn't it touching? I know you feel that way. You know what I mean? You go out there and you give Lindor. Lindor says no to $325 million like it's an insult. But I'll take the $341 million because it's a million more than Tatis. And then stinks up the joint for the first month of the season or whatever, right? We got that problem going on. And just like he wants invested in Cespedes and all of this other stuff, you got the Grom, and I'll give you that. But your pitchers, you know, live, you know, I mean, it's always injured because they live in the hospital because it's like a damn infirmary or something. There's always something that goes wrong. The only argument that I can make on behalf of the New York Mets is that it is 20 years later. And once every 20 years or so, y'all really show up. I mean, you went to the World Series in 2000, although you lost. Went back in 2015. You know, you went to the NLCS and stuff like that. And you were relevant, but ultimately you bowed out. So you could make the argument that it has been since 1986 that you've done anything. So you might try to do it again, and that's nice. But in the end, you'll never be the Yankees, just like the Clippers will never be the Lakers. We understand these things. It's not hard to figure out.
I'm not. Wow. We're up against the clock, Stephen, and you're very fortunate for that.
Really? Really? You're telling the truth?
Well, but I don't care about popularity. So in 86, what did all those rings mean in 86? All the Ruth and Gehrig and DiMaggio, what did it mean in 86? Nothing.
Don, I gave you results. I gave you results. And my results were so profound. Listen, man.
Listen, you grew up in Hollis, right? You're a Queens kid. You're a fraud. Why weren't you a Mets fan? Because you needed the winning. Because let's face it, baseball doesn't do it for you unless you're winning. That's why you didn't become a Mets fan. You weren't strong enough to be a Mets fan. So you figured, this baseball thing's kind of corny, but, you know, I'll get into it as long as they're winning. So the one kid in Queens didn't root for the Mets because you were intoxicated by the winning. You don't root for the Yankees. You root for the winning.
Don LaGreca, I explained to you on this show on many occasions that my dad never, ever once allowed us to watch the Mets until I turned 18. I was living in Queens, 10 minutes from the old Shea Stadium, and never saw a Mets game until I was 18 years of age because my father wouldn't allow it. That's how I became a Yankee fan because it was all I knew because I didn't even know the Mets existed. So that was a problem. That was number one. And number two, you're in no position to talk because once upon a time, you used to walk around with a Don King afro. But then you slicked it back and went the Pat Riley route because you recognized that people were assuming the Mets were so bad they had your hair standing up and you had to change it.
Wow.
Okay. I've got to end with this one tweet that somebody sent out, and I think it's a good tweet. It's from Blanderson Hooper, all right? He said, how big is Stephen A.'s house that he walked from the TV to the fridge and the score swung 18 points? That's a large house.
I mean, damn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it ain't a – I will say this. It ain't a small one. He's assuming – but he's assuming that I didn't make any stops in route to getting my water. And that's the part about him. That's the part about me that he doesn't know. That Don and Peter and Michael K.
That's right.
In the interview like that.
Peter,
love Steven, you, Steven.
We thank you, man. Thanks so
love
much.
Love y'all, man.
Love you.
Take care.
Wow. Always. I asked him if he'd be at the Yankee Red Sox game, and he spun it into attacking Don. That was brilliant.
You love that.
Oh, I enjoyed it tremendously.
I had to fight back, though.
You thought about it, but then you said, I better fight back.
I appreciate that.
I was only intimidated a little bit by the clock, but then I realized, you know what?
It doesn't matter.
He was begging for it.
My pride is more important.
There you go.
Well, the 2021 NBA playoffs are back in Brooklyn, and tickets for round one are on sale now. So make sure you're at Barclays Center, see the Brooklyn Nets take on the Boston Celtics. Visit brooklynnets.com to purchase your tickets today. And keep it locked in to this show, because we're going to give away a pair of Nets tickets for Game 2 later this hour. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Hell yeah.
Settle in. Towel off. Shower off. We'll be back on Yes on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.